Welcome to Logistics with Purpose, presented by Vector Global Logistics in partnership with Supply Chain Now. We spotlight and celebrate organizations who are dedicated to creating a positive impact. Join us for this behind-the-scenes glimpse of the origin stories, change-making progress, and future plans of organizations who are actively making a difference. Our goal isn't just to entertain you, but to inspire you to go out and change the world. And now, here's today's episode of Logistics with Purpose.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Logistics with Purpose. I am Chief Marketing Officer at Vector Global Logistics, Christy Porter, and I am joined today by my very rare co-host, but always excited, Nuria Sierra, Global Marketing Director. Nuria, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, Christy?
I'm good. And we just met our guest, or actually are just still getting to know him. Just saw him at an event a couple of weeks ago and immediately thought, we're ready to talk to this guy and hear more about his story. So I will let you introduce him and then we'll get rolling.
Awesome. So today we are super thrilled to welcome Chris Forbes. He's the dynamic co-founder of the Cheeky Panda, which launched alongside with his wonderful partner, Julie. The Cheeky Panda is not just another company. It has been recognized as the sixth top startup in the UK, listed in the Sunday Times Fast Track 100 Ones to Watch, and proudly holds a B Corp certification, underscoring its commitment to positive change. So Chris is also deeply passionate about driving impactful change for good, and is a regular presence in various media platforms, including podcast, press, and radio, and he's well known for his engaging keynote speeches. So today, he's here to share his insights with us. So Chris, welcome to Logistics with Purpose, and thank you so much for being here with us today. How are you doing?
Great, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Awesome. Well, thrilled to have you here. And most of our listeners, of course, connect through their favorite podcast platform, but we really encourage you to go onto YouTube for this one and check out Chris's headgear. It will definitely make you remember him, remember Cheeky Panda, and it certainly did with us. And that's one of the reasons we're here today. So Chris, to get us started, before we dive into some of your background and things, I wanted to just ask some quick questions to get things going. So hopefully these will come to you quickly, and they'll be the start of a great discussion. So first of all, what is the best advice you've received?
Best advice I've ever received is try to be eloquent, which is don't try to be a busy fool. Try to think about what you're trying to do before you do it.
Wow, that is good and very unique. And if you could have a superpower, what would that be?
My superpower would be negotiation.
Ooh, good one. I would like that one as well. And what's your go-to productivity hack? You guys have grown so much, so what keeps you on top of your tasks?
Try to be flexible.
Another good one. What's the most interesting place you've ever visited?
I would say it's Japan, followed by China. And it's just because it's so different there to what it is to how I've grown up.
Oh, that's good. And what's your favorite way to unwind after a long day?
My favorite way to unwind is, if the weather is nice, to sit in my garden.
Good answer.
Amazing. Amazing. Wow, I love those answers. And also Japan and China, they are both on my bucket list. So hopefully one day. So Chris, to start us off, please, can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and your childhood, please?
Certainly. So I'm Scottish. You might detect from my accent. It's not quite pure English. I was born in Perth, in Perthshire, which is
I lived 5 years in Scotland.
Ah, okay. So I lived in Central Highlands, which is up the A9. So it's a very beautiful part of the world. I lived by a 16-mile lock, forest as far as the eye could see to the left, and a big mountain on the right-hand side. And living in a place like that really sort of lends to appreciate nature. It's also quite a small community as well, so it's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to leave there as well, because while it's very beautiful, there's not enough to do.
Amazing.
Well, I didn't hear it as much until you started talking about Scotland, and then your accent definitely comes out more. I love it. So looking back, you talk about nature, so I'm sure this is going to kind of weave into this, but what's a story from those early years that shaped who you are and what you're doing right now?
I mean, I think I've always been quite sort of outdoorsy. In Scotland, you learn to appreciate weather patterns as well, because you can have four seasons in one day. It can suddenly be rain, it can be hail, it can be beautiful sunshine. It can be very warm and very cold at the same time, so it's you start to appreciate like your environment around you, and you understand sort of nature. And I think sustainability for me was something that, we used to do salmon fishing, and then you understand like why there's a lot less salmon because of overfishing. And then you start to understand the impact that you have in the world. And I think that's always kind of sort of stayed with me, understanding like how like we are as people and how we share this planet with so many different things.
Was sustainability, was that a concept you understood at that age, or is it kind of looking back?
Oh yeah, definitely understood it from an early age. I think maybe not in the way that we talk about it now in terms of measurement, but you sort of understand it from changing weather conditions and stuff like how many fish there are. Why is there not? Is there going to be fish, in 20 years' time? And that would be a big shame. So I was always kind of aware of overfishing and the environment.
Amazing. So, Chris, you graduated from the University of Greenwich with a Business of Arts in philosophy. So, how did your time there shape your path, and what key moments sparked your decision to pursue entrepreneurship?
So, I mean, philosophy is kind of something that I was interested in because I studied psychology and sociology and some sort of geography as well, which kind of a lot of the sort of key economic principles or sort of social thinking was derived from philosophy. So I've decided that maybe by studying philosophy, I might be able to sort of tackle some of the big questions that we have. And it's, philosophy is a very enjoyable subject. I mean, whether I would spend as much money on a philosophy degree these days, knowing how much education costs, was probably a debatable, but we were still sort of free tuition in my generation, so I was fortunate enough to be able to do a humanities degree, and yeah, it kind of sort of allows me to look at some of the big picture questions, and I still actively sort of read philosophy, and I'm also still involved to certain degrees with Greenwich University as well, as well. I get invited back quite often.
Love it.
We're here to talk about Cheeky Panda, but before we do that, you of course had things going on before that time. So tell us about your first projects back in the 90s, fishingnet.com. You had a PhD in search and selection. I don't know what that means, so I would love to hear more. But how did your background that on how did it shape your entrepreneurial mindset and approach to business, innovation? Please explain search and se selection degree.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So fishing net, I mean, that was what it was in the early days of the internet. My friend was talking about creating a website to map all the different rivers in Scotland and how we could sell ongoing services. And I thought, I mean, we looked at what domains were available, and we went, well, fishing, and fishing was obviously taken, and we were like, well, what about fishing net, because it's fishing on the net. So we were able to buy that domain name. And then we created a dynamic website that sold fishing services through Scotland and throughout the UK. So that was my sort of first touch into entrepreneurship. Unfortunately, I was doing that from Scotland, which isn't really kind of the hub of e-commerce or entrepreneurship. And I kind of, at that point in time, I sort of kind of wanted to sort of be involved in more sort of senior business leadership discussions. And that's kind of when I got involved with PhD Search and Selection, which is a headhunting business. in financial services and capital markets. And why I liked working in that business is because I could work with very senior people at a very early age. And at the age of sort of 21, 22, I was dealing with directors of operations. And then by the age of 25, I was working in Wall Street with billion-pound hedge fund managers. So it definitely allowed me to work at a more senior level, where it would take me sort of 10 to 15 years in a more traditional corporate environment to get to that level. So yeah, I've had a lot of great experiences globally in doing that. And that business was very much a lifestyle business, as I could make a lot of money without having to work particularly too hard to make that money, because I built such a strong network. So it was a bit of a step change to kind of come in from one end of the market to essentially the bottom of the market.
That's really clever.
Interesting. So, Chris, in 2016, you and Julie Chen founded Cheeky Panda. So, for our audience who has yet to become familiar with it, please tell us what it is, how everything started, how is that impacting the world, and why toilet paper?
Paper.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in a lot in that.
I know.
So when Julie, myself and Julie were dating at the time, and now we're married. And she came to me in 2015. She was running an e-commerce business at the time, so she was very much into sort of entrepreneurship. We had a shared love of business. And she came to me one day and said, "Why don't we make toilet tissue out of bamboo?" And I said, "Why would we do that?" And she said, "Because it's the world's fastest growing plant." And I went, "Well, why is no one else doing it? And is it any good?" And she said to me, "It's a brilliant material. It's very soft. It's very strong. It's quite luxurious." I said, "Well, let's get some." And then for the next sort of 6 months, we trialed it. And she came up with the concept of Cheeky Panda. And I said, "That's very clever, using the word cheeky, because it's a double entendre." So cheeky came, she thought was happy cheeky. She didn't realize it meant also meant bum cheeky, which is quite funny. And I said, "Listen, okay, like, if we're going to build a business like this, if you're going to, essentially, it's a sustainable business because you're using the world's fastest growing plant." I said, "We need to check, all the bamboo comes out of China." So I said, "We need to go and check the supply chain." So we took a trip to China, met her parents for the first time, and then went to investigate bamboo. And during that trip to China, I went from like an airport to like a 5 hour car journey. So imagine like going from like London to the border of Scotland, and then the whole thing was bamboo. It's like, just bamboo as far as the eye could see. So I thought, well, we're never going to run out of this ever. What a fabulous resource. And I was really impressed with the supply chain and the manufacturing. And that's kind of where I said, okay, I think, there's a real business here. And let's start the foundations to build that business.
Wow. Okay, so I have a couple follow-up questions on that then. So one, and maybe this is just where you were then versus where we are now. Now we see everything from clothing to towels to so many things made of bamboo. So why was toilet paper the main factor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an original idea. So, we were the first company in Europe to do bamboo tissue, and it wasn't even well known in China that you could make tissue out of bamboo. It was only because Julie was Chinese and she knew it came from the region, so that's why she knew about it. So I think, we were attracted not just to be a copycat. I think anybody can copy an idea. To come up with an original idea, means that you can actually make a market. And that's some of the stuff that I've been doing in my other business, is actually, trying to become number one and sort of making markets, building markets that hadn't been built before. So to be able to do it with a product, it was intellectually appealing. while also understanding there's obviously a lot of risk when you do that. So that's probably the main reason.
Right. And so again, forgive my naivety, is does bamboo grow like in forests? How is it grown
Yeah,
harvested?
it does. I mean, it almost looks like a forest of trees, and it can grow up to about sort of 15 meters. So and it harvests every year. So when you cut down bamboo, it just regrows from the root. It's a grass, So it just, and then when you cut down a tree's dead at the root. Trees take a long time to grow. So being able to use something that's, we live in a world of stretched resources. So being able to use something that's such so replenishable, like next to like wind and water and energy, it's, you know, it's one of the most sustainable things on our planet. So, you know, why not be using it in a lot more ways than what we were back in 2016? And 2016 was, you know, sustainability wasn't on everybody's you know,
Right.
top of the list. It was, well, we'll buy it if it's cheaper. You know, was the approach to sustainability. And I think that's changed now. But you know, if you build something early, then when the market catches up with you, you know, that means you're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. And so my other question too is the three of us world travelers. We love to travel. You just talked about your experience going to China to see this for the first time. I'm curious, how did those financial and entrepreneurial wheels start turning, career that you had built to that point? How did that come into play when you started this business and started building it from the ground up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's like the first question is, can you prove that people want the product? I'd watched what BrewDog had done with their they'd done some a crowdfunding campaign with Punks for Equity, and I thought that was a really good way to market test your idea. So when we started the business, I said to Julie, I said, let's go and see if strangers would buy the product. I said, because if strangers buy the product, then we've actually got something here. But if it's just you and I that think it's a good idea, then maybe it's not a good idea. So being able to use that to market test it, we started off a very small campaign of about £10,000. And we sort of reached that within sort of 4 weeks. And I went, okay, well, if strangers want to buy it, then you know we're obviously onto something here. And we were able to sort of like pre-sell that. So as we were getting the product ready, we were able to sort of bring on new clients. Because it, you know, business is about trying to achieve revenue as quickly as possible. And if you're always kind of stuck in research and development, then you've got to carry lots of costs and, you know, people costs, and you've got bills to pay and mortgages and stuff like that. So first and foremost, I kind of looked at the financial side of things. But secondly, what I did, I looked at actually how to build the market. And so I downloaded the Harvard Business School plan and spent about 40 hours using the template to kind of build out what I thought the business would look like. And about 3 years later, when I went back to the original plan, I'd say that 70% of what was analyzed in that document came out to be relatively correct.
We see an immense value in having a strong purpose driving your company forward. So, as it can deeply impact both your professional and personal journey. So, as a mom as well, understanding that our children often serve as powerful motivators and sources of inspiration. So we are eager to hear about how your little one has influenced the development of new product within the company.
Yeah, so I mean, we had our son in September 2018. So in the middle of having a very early stage startup business, we decided to not like let life stop, and we had a child. You know, and it you know it was high pressure, but it was the right thing to do. And then once we had our baby, we were using either like Pampers or like wet wipes, baby wipes, and we were like, he kept getting skin rashes, and they dried out really quickly. And we went, well, can we make baby wipes out of bamboo? And sort of 4 or 5 months later, we had Cheeky Panda baby wipes. So that directly influenced us because, you know, we could almost sort of see that we could create a better product. And then we sort of developed some more sort of baby care products like sort of nappies and sort of dry wipes as well. So yeah, and it's, you know, it's a nice thing that you actually want your children to kind of have, you know, good material, but also sustainable material. And so that kind of sort of, you know, helped our thinking on that.
Yeah. Wow. That came to market really fast. And I'm sure there was a huge need for that as well. Well, we had the pleasure of hearing you speak a couple of weeks ago, for one of the B month events. So we recently obtained our B Corp certification. You've been in that community for a long time. I'm curious about a couple of things. One, you obviously have had a strong commitment to sustainability and eco-friendliness since the beginning. I think we've seen just through our own experiences, as well as through the events that Nuri and I had the pleasure of attending, that's becoming a much bigger conversation, especially within the bee community, but just generally. So how do you feel like we're kind of, I feel like we're kind of in a tipping point with that conversation. Would you agree, or are you like, finally everybody's getting on the wagon? We should have all been here all along, or kind of what's your stance on that?
Yeah, I mean, sustainability is a journey, right? And like any change and transition, there's early adopters and then there's early majority, late majority. It kind of needs pioneers and innovators to kind of, really sort of jump ahead. We were one of the first 100 companies in the UK to become a B Corp. And I sort of did question some of the amount of work that had to go into it for something that wasn't an established certification at the time. But I did think that the pillars that we were building on in terms of like social value, justice and environmental were actually really good things for us to think about. So that's why I sort of, why we ended up becoming a B Corp. And, as you sort of see it build, you see sort of more people kind of coming in and thinking about, what's the world that we want tomorrow? And, there's some pretty big commitments being made by some, by government as well as large companies about sort of 2025, 2030, 2050 carbon targets. And you can't do it alone, right? You can't plow the field by yourself. And this is why, having many partners and shared knowledge actually helps it achieve quicker. And this is why I also like doing these types of podcasts is, just to sort of the great that you guys are engaged in this journey as well. And great that your audience are listening to it. And if we can all work together, then we can all get there a bit faster.
Absolutely. So this is Logistics with Purpose. So I, of course, you were talking about your supply chain a minute ago. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about that as well. You have bamboo fields in China. I'm guessing a lot of your product manufacturing comes from China. When you're trying to do it, not only just if you declare that you'll be doing it in some kind of an ethical manner or environmental manner, but then put like rigorous standards behind it, like you have done, and like you're required to do with B Corp about checking out your suppliers. Is that, or how does that look for you? What kind of process is that to make sure that who you're working with is who they say they are and who is also working for a common good?
I mean, I think I wouldn't have done this business if I hadn't gone to China in the first instance and got my eyes on it. I certainly wouldn't have been able to do it without Julie, my wife, because she's Chinese. She speaks the language. And we also put a team in China, so we've got like five people in China doing quality assurance and procurement. Building a sustainable business is a lot more than sort of taking an Alibaba product and sticking a label on a box. And I think we've seen a few people recently that have come short in terms of their product because they think they're buying the right thing and it's not really the right thing, but they haven't really taken ownership of that. And I think that's something that, it is things about, people that create original businesses and sort of founders, if you do it in the right way, then you're actually doing it with a certain degree of diligence. That's definitely a lot of parts to the supply chain, and it's changed through time as well because look, we started off with one product and, which was toilet tissue. Then we did kitchen towel, and then we started to did straws, and then straws come from a different factory. And then we're sort of looking at like, okay, well, some of it has to be sort of moved by barge, by boat, and then it puts on ocean freight, and then ocean freight to distribution, and we distribute in 27 different countries. So some of it kind of goes into centralized distribution into the States or into like Antwerp or into the UK, and then some of it will just go like containers directly into the Middle East, for example. Or Australia. As the business evolves, so does your supply chain, and you're always kind of looking for ways to improve the supply chain. In fact, I'm off to China next week to go and film my supply chain because a lot of people think that China's dirty, and in fact, our factories use solar panels, they use water recycling, they're all using modern manufacturing, which is extremely efficient. And what we want to do is really want to showcase one, the bamboo fields, but actually also the supply chain and kind of sort of demystify that things from China are dirty or not being, being powered by coal, and actually show people, actually, this is how things are being done.
Fantastic. I look forward to watching that in the future.
Yes, I was going to say the same. So,
So was supply chain your biggest challenge, or was there another one that was even bigger?
I think challenges, I think working capital is probably the biggest challenge for any sort of FMCG business. When we started this business, we had to buy the products up front because there's no lines of credit. And then you've got to 2 months for it to be produced, and then it's got, maybe 2 months in a supply chain, a month in a warehouse, and then sometimes 60 days for your clients to pay you. So you can end up with almost 9 months of supply chain costs. And if you're doing, I think within about sort of 2 years, we were doing like £100,000 a month turnover. You're then running like £1 million worth of supply chain costs, and the banks don't give you any money at that point in time. And that's probably the hardest thing that we had to deal with, is how do you continue to scale without sort of having, good financing are available. I think it's a lot better now. There's been some more entrants into the market that kind of sort of do more working capital finance, but certainly when we were there, it was very, very tough. And that's why we chose equity crowdfunding, mainly to be able to create the lines of credit that we needed to be able to continue to scale at the level we were scaling at. So, and then yeah, secondly, behind that is the movement of goods. I think we sell about 400,000 units a month. So that's a lot of boxes, that's a lot of product. That's a lot of FMCG goods. So again, that's kind of requires good systems, good processes, good people.
So, Chris, looking towards the future, how do you see the role of innovation in sustainable household products evolving? And what would be the next for Cheeky Panda in its mission to change the way we think about everyday essentials?
I think changing a toilet roll is probably one of the easiest sustainable things that you can do. It's something that you use every day, and if you can, like people talk about, like, so how, how can we achieve these large goals at like 2030 or 2050? Actually, if we don't, if it, it's inches and yards is how I describe it. So if you can kind of make lots of little steps, and it actually, if everyone makes lots of little steps, then together we're all making very large steps, and I think that's how. I look at household and consumer goods is actually, it's one of the easiest things to change, putting in solar panels or water harvesting. They're very expensive. They take years of payback. They're certainly quite high risk. But stuff like this is kind of like an easy switch. So I think that's kind of our role, and that's why I think we've got around about sort of 12 sort of core products. And it just kind of sort of says, well, what category can we play in, and how can we make it easy for consumers to change? And probably having high quality products is probably the most important things, because people like sustainability, but they don't want to sacrifice quality. So if you can actually deliver high quality products, as well as sustainability, then I think that's kind of where you become, a very interesting, business.
Absolutely. You certainly have an impressive the way you've implemented sustainability from top to bottom. And another thing we haven't really gotten to discuss yet that I'm here curious to hear more about your perspective on is that you're also implementing more of the circular economy. So what does that look like for Cheeky Panda?
So I mean, it's cradle to grave. And then it's kind of looking at, so part of it is kind of more nearshore manufacturing. So we've, like, all our wipes are done in the UK now. And then it's also kind of looking about, the benefits of bamboo, because it produces lots of oxygen, it absorbs lots of carbon. And actually, can bamboo and its whole supply chain be net zero? And there's a lot of work, there's a lot of groundbreaking work that has to be done to prove that. But that's certainly something that we're kind of working on to, sort of look at that. The phrase we use is every paw print matters. And because we're bears, like panda bears. And like, how can we make sure that the paw prints that we leave for the behind are the smallest paw prints?
I love that. And you are, when this comes out, we'll be wrapping up Earth Month 2024. So, given your extensive experience, I'm curious, do you have just something for people, a step they can take, a question they can ask themselves. You mentioned earlier that sustainability is a journey that we're all on in some capacity. So, what would your advice to people be?
My advice to the first, the easy one is looking is, do I need that plastic? What can I do? Like, if you go to the supermarket, go to the market, can you take reusable fruit bags? You look at, the packaging of products and sort of say, well, actually, one product's wrapped in plastic and then the other was wrapped in recyclable paper. Make those. Make those simple switches, and I think there's the don't try to overcomplicate it, right? And don't try to be advanced level before you've done the beginner level. Just work through, and then once you understand one thing, then the rest of it all starts to become a lot easier.
Advice.
Yeah, that's a great advice, I think, because these are like small acts and small decisions that we can make on our daily basis that can have a big impact. So
Right. So there's a phrase by Zif, small acts made by millions of people has got the ability to change the world.
exactly. No, I love it. I love it. Chris, wrapping up, how can our listeners connect with you? And of course, how can they learn more about Cheeky Panda? And we will make
Well,
sure.
I would encourage everybody if you want to look for me on LinkedIn. It's just Chris Forbes on LinkedIn. You'll see my panda hat. That'll be me. From the if you want to know more about our products, cheekypanda.com, and you can buy these as a consumer, but they're also available as a business as well. So if you want to have more sustainable products for your staff, then cheekypanda.com. Works with national distributors throughout Europe, but for the UK and from the US, and we can supply as many staff as you want with beautiful soft bamboo products.
Perfect.
Awesome.
And you're sold in how many countries now?
27 countries.
Seven.
Wow.
A lot of Europe. I mean, Europe's got lots of countries. We sell in a lot of states as well. But I think Europe's a bit like America's kind of like the states or countries in the Europe. So you get a lot of countries in Europe. So, but yeah, and then sort of Middle East and bits of Asia as well.
Amazing.
And congratulations on your success. Thank you for being here with us today. This was a great conversation. And as we said, we heard just a little bit of your story a couple of weeks ago in London. So it was delightful to hear more about you and Julie and the soft side of things of how you're making the world better for us. So thank you so much for everything you do. And thank you to everyone who tuned in for another episode. Join us again in 2 weeks and we'll have another great conversation for you on Logistics with Purpose. Thanks for being here, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.